This continuing, this phase of the transformation does suggest reconsidering the theoretically presumed concatenation, which means a series of interconnected things or events, or the action of linking things together, the theoretically presumed concatenation of centralization and concentration of capital. But even more, it suggests reconceptualizing the fundamental nature of the accumulation process as it is framed throughout the idea of the circuits of capital. For when the indebted states run into trouble, one of the agencies of this arrangement, the IMF, steps forward with austerity plans, the gist and substance of which amount to lowering the costs, now internationally reckoned, of the daily and generational reproduction of the labor forces of within each of the countries. My comment, once again, he's saying the term nation state exists to invite confusion. And of course, you know that when they talk about lowering our reproduction costs, they're talking about reducing our life expectancy, our health, our happiness exponentially over time. Continuing, the arrangement is not per se historically new. One thinks of the Ottoman capitulations, for example, but it is far more massive and as a structural array of processes of the world system, far more frequent in occurrence and telling in its implications for the structuring of the accumulation process as such. Together, these three facets of the ongoing structural transformation of the modern world system, all of which reveal to a greater or lesser extent the structural surround of the state power seized or occupied by anti-systemic movements in the course of the 20th century, and indicate the degree and kind of reconstitution of terrain with which present and future movements of a like sort have to contend. They indicate as well, though this is not of central concern here, the anachronism of the contents we give to the concepts with which we commonly work. The dilemmas of the anti-systemic movements are thus, in some measure, the unintended product of a sort of false consciousness on the part not of toadies, nor even of hair splitters, but of the most engaged of the intelligentsia. There remains a matter to end on here, to raise as a sort of coda, for nothing before has directly prefigured it. This is the ongoing transformation of communications networks. The Communist Manifesto observes, quote, "And that union, to attain which the burghers of the Middle Ages with their miserable highways required centuries, the modern proletarians, thanks to railways, achieve in a few years," unquote. It is now nearly a century and a half since that was written. That sentence has lost none of its force, but it must be understood contemporarily. In the United States in the 1960s, what affected the interrelation of the 150 or so black demonstrations and the even more numerous public forms of the anti-war movement was television, which is why the commanding officer of the Grenada operation, Grenada, less than half the size in territory and people of an upstate New York county, and he's, I'm sure, referring to the one he was sitting in, because he taught at the State University of New York at Binghamton, less than half the size in territory and people of an upstate New York county, Grenada, which is why the commanding officer of the Grenada operation correctly, from the U.S. government's point of view, decreed there was to be no accompanying news coverage of the invasion. The kind of concern flagged in the manifesto, the material means of unity among those geographically separate remains central. The means themselves and the very form of their materiality have been fundamentally transformed. More and more anti-systemic movements will find their own cohesion and coherence forged and destroyed by the newest of the means of mediating social relations. Where then are we? This was 30 years ago as I read this. We are massively, seriously, in urgent need of reconstructing the strategy, perhaps the ideology, perhaps the organizational structure of the family of world anti-systemic movements, if we are to cope effectively with the real dilemmas before which we are placed, as the stateness of states and the capitalist nature of capitalism grow at an incredible pace. We know this creates objective contradictions for the system as such and for the managers of the status quo. But it creates dilemmas for the anti-systemic movements almost as grave. Thus, we cannot count on the automaticity of progress. We cannot abandon, therefore, critical analysis of our real historical alternatives. And that concludes the chapter, and arguably that is precisely what happened. Critical analysis was abandoned. Who do you know of sense to think so strategically and so realistically and so passionately about how to affect a global movement that is anti-systemic, as we see in this from Terence K. Hopkins? And I invite Emmanuel Wallerstein to challenge me on that. Until next week, peace. Saying this is the answer. I'm saying the fact that we aren't allowed to talk about it says volumes. It means we gotta grab this for ourselves, these conversations. We have to test these unconscious assumptions ourselves.